Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Jay Stevens Podcast, part of the Off the Ball Network. This is episode 211, dedicated to a man who on July 12th, 1994, was named the Major League Baseball All-Star Game MVP, Mr. Fred McGriff. And as always, thank you for listening and downloading another episode of the podcast. On today's episode, we talk a little bit about what's going on right now in the NBA Finals, the poll results for the first week of voting for the best college football player since the year 2000, and a mistake people in the media, including myself, made last week. But first, tonight, it's one of the most exciting nights in the entire Major League Baseball season. It's the Home Run Derby. Yes, I heard somebody on TV say, Major League Baseball Home Run Derby, it's for kids, not for adults. This is an adult saying, this event is not just for the youngsters, but those of us that are a little bit older as well. The Home Run Derby, when I was a youngster, I loved it. Yes, I did love it a lot when I was a kid. Sammy Sosa, Ken Griffey Jr., Mark McGwire, all of these guys, when they get to the Home Run Derby, they knock the ball out of the park over and over and over and over again. I'm not just talking about barely getting it over a wall that's at 345 feet. No, I mean, these are 400, 425, 450, 500 foot. I think somebody even hit 520, a home run 520 at Fenway Park. I mean, these guys are hitting moonshots. Back. Yes, I know Chris Berman's probably not going to be doing this year's Home Run Derby from the booth, but if he was, we would hear over and over again, back. Hey, y'all, this is one of the most exciting times to me in the season because for me, somebody that loves the football, the action, the basketball, the action, the pace, the speed, baseball, which is really slow and hard to watch on the television, this event here is something that, oh my goodness, I thoroughly enjoy and love watching every single year. Major League Baseball, in the Home Run Derby, they seed everything. The 1-8 matchup, the 4-5 matchup, the 2-7 matchup, and the 3-6 matchup. So the matchups for tonight, and I'm just going to let you know who I'm going to be picking to win the Home Run Derby and why I'm picking this individual. Number one overall seed, Shohei Ohtani. Number is faced up against Juan Soto, the 8 seed. 4-5 matchup, Salvador Perez. I know I can say all these names clearly. Salvador Perez, the 4 seed. Pete Alonso, the reigning champ, because there was no derby last year. Reigning champ for 2019, Pete Alonso is the 4 seed. The 2-7 matchup, 2 seed Joey Gallo. 7 seed Trevor Story. Matt Olson, 3 seed, up against Trey Mancini, the 6th seed in this year's Home Run Derby. I was looking forward to Fernando Tatis Jr. and Vlad Guerrero Jr. being in this one, but we see they're not in this year's Home Run Derby. And your boy is going with the young man from Japan. The young man who, at this time, he is a two-way star, as one article wrote about him, as he is the home run leader right now, number one seed in the Home Run Derby, 33 home runs on the season. Max distance, which is the longest distance of any competitor in this year's Home Run Derby, 470 feet. Someone said, how in the world is Shohei Ohtani going to make it in as a hitter and as a pitcher, because his pitching numbers don't really stack up to make him an all-star this year? Hey, it doesn't really matter to me. I don't really care. He's an all-star. They voted him in, so be it. It's good for baseball, what Shohei Ohtani has done. It's good for the game, what Shohei Ohtani has done. And that's who I am picking to win the Home Run Derby. You could say, Jay, you're going with chalk. I don't care what you want to call it. I want to see a pitcher win this event. I want to see a pitcher come in, be the favorite, and do exactly what people expect him to do. I like the two-way aspect of Shohei Ohtani. I like exactly how, when I get and I watch some highlights, I can expect him to possibly, there's probably going to be a chance he's hitting a home run or making a good hit for his teammates. That's my pick. I like Shohei Ohtani. I wonder if you do as well. Tweet at me, JStevens07, at JStevens07 on Twitter, to let me know exactly which route you're going when it comes to the home run derby and who you're picking to win the game. Let's go ahead and take a trip to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, because last night, Giannis Antetokounmpo and the rest of the Bucks did what they needed to do at home in Game 3, won the very first game that they've hosted in the NBA Finals, and got their first Finals win since 1974. You know, when I think about the Bucks, the Milwaukee Bucks, not the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but when I think about the Milwaukee basketball team and what is needed for them to be successful, the old days of the Milwaukee Bucks, it reminds me of a scene from the Temptations movie. When I was younger, there was a guy named by the name of Devin Williams. Him and I were pretty good friends, hung out quite a bit with the church together. Him and I played rec league basketball together. His dad was a coach, so there was a lot of time I spent with them at practice, spent with them at their house. And so it was a lot of fun hanging out with Devin. And Devin had the Temptations movie. My parents did not have the movie, so when I went to Devin's house, there were numerous times that I would watch this movie, pop it in, and just play that thing over and over and over. This is the old school VCR days. It's really weird saying VCR when the VCR was used not that long ago, but these were VCR days, not the days of Blu-ray now, or excuse me, the streaming now, or even the DVDs that people use as well. No, these were all the days of the VCR, the VHS tape. And when I was at Devin's house, I would watch that thing over and over, and it really just helped me learn to appreciate and enjoy the music that the Temptations put out back in the heyday of Motown. Well, the Temptations movie, there is a scene in the movie. Now, I forget exactly every single detail, the scenes before, the scenes after, but I remember this scene very, very well. David Ruffin, phenomenal voice, phenomenal singer, found his way inside of the group. He was added to the group. He was not an original member. And when he was in the group, David Ruffin wanted to make sure everybody knew that he was the main voice. He was a big voice. He was an amazing vocalist. And he was an individual that when he was a part of the group, he believed the group was at its best when David Ruffin was the lead singer. Right before a concert, I believe it was a concert, not a banquet, but it could have been one of the two, David Ruffin was not supposed to be there. He kind of slid his way right up in front of the group. Otis was about to introduce the group and the singers, and David Ruffin, as he did, quickly, swiftly, smoothly, slid right up front in front of Otis and said, "My name is David Ruffin, and these are the Temptations." You could see the disgruntled look around the other faces. And there are times that when I watch the Milwaukee Bucks play basketball, it would be something similar like, "My name is Giannis Antetokounmpo, and these are the Milwaukee Bucks." Because that was what the formula was for them to win the basketball. I mean, you look at them. Look at their team. Yeah, you got Chris Middleton. Yeah, you got Jrue Holiday. Yeah, you got Robin Lopez. Yeah, you got Bobby Portis, but a lot of these guys are interchangeable. They're journeymen in the NBA. They are going to go around the league and go other places. And basically, it was Giannis and everybody else. Now, the makeup and the chemistry of this team is different than the Temptations because during that scene in the movie, the Temptations, David Ruffin was ruffling feathers of the other members. They were trying to get him out. They were tired of his shenanigans, tired of him not practicing, tired of his drug addiction and the way that he was around women. They were tired of all of that. So they're trying to get rid of him. But David Ruffin said, no, baby, this is me. It's David Ruffin. And these are the Temptations. Giannis is not a bragging individual. Giannis is not the bold individual that David Ruffin was, but it was still the same thing. I think about how David Ruffin's mindset was. It's the same way many fans look at the Bucks, the older Bucks, maybe last year, the year before. It's Giannis and everybody else. You can look at Giannis' stats the past couple days where he has done some things that, well, are very, very rarely done. 40 points and 10 rebounds in back-to-back finals games in NBA history. In NBA history, this is a history that dates back, I believe, to the 1946-47 season. Shaq, in the year 2000, did that thing. LeBron, in the year 2016, did that thing. And then Giannis, yesterday, as well. Giannis, as well, he has More 40-point games. I know some of you like the stats. I'm going to throw a few stats at you very quickly. Giannis has more 40-point games in the finals than Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan, Larry Bird, Karl Malone, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and Wilt Chamberlain. Might I add you, Kevin Durant's played in multiple, I believe every individual here has played in multiple NBA Finals. Tim Duncan, not really known for the 40-point scoring, so that one doesn't surprise me, but Kobe it does, Steph it does, KD it does, Bird it does, but I still don't think Bird was asked to score as much when you have Kevin McHale and Robert Parrish on the basketball team with you. Kareem, Wilt, he's in an exclusive group. And Giannis, once again, joins one more exclusive group I'm going to touch on very quickly. Giannis Antetokounmpo joins these legends who scored 40-plus points in at least two games in a single NBA Finals. This list includes Michael Jordan, who did it four times. Jerry West is on here a few times. Rick Barry, LeBron, Shaq, Elgin Baylor, D. Wade's on that list. I mean, to put Giannis on that list again with some more legends, that is amazing. But remember how I said it was Giannis and everybody else, and it was Giannis and he ain't getting no help. It was Giannis, if you show up, oh, it's all you, and Giannis is doing things that he needs to do to lead the team to victory because ain't nobody else on the team going to be able to do that thing to help the team win a game. That's not this Bucks team. That's not this team right now. Yeah, a lot of those same players are there, but man, outside of not having White Dante, these guys are really playing the basketball, and these guys are really stepping up, and it's no longer David Ruffin, and these are the Temptations. Where the Temptations without David Ruffin, they were a really, really, really good group, but David Ruffin, hey, he said, hey, this is me, this is all me, and y'all really ain't that important because I'm the show. Well, Giannis is the show. Giannis was the show. And Giannis doing that, many people thought, hey, it's Giannis, David Ruffin, and it's just everybody else. Well, no, not nobody else. Not like that no more. Giannis has some help. So much help that in this past game where the Bucks got their first win, like I mentioned earlier, their first finals win since 1974, making the series, the final series, 2-2-1. Giannis put up 41 points on 13 rebounds, 6 assists, plus 20 plus minus, but he also got some help from Chris Middleton, who had 18 points. I believe Chris Middleton also had 29 points in game number one, where Giannis had 20, where Giannis was not sure if he was going to play in that game simply because of the knee injury, where not many people knew what we were going to get from Giannis, and we're finally seeing it. Brook Lopez, I said Robin Lopez earlier. I always get the brothers mixed up, but Bucks, Brook, it should be in my head from now on. Brook had 11 points, a plus minus of plus 6. Drew Holiday had 21 points, kind of someone that you expect a little bit, but not so much. Also put in 40 minutes. Bobby Portis was a key contributor, plus 19, plus minus, with 11 points there. The Bucks, when they want to impose their will, the Bucks, when they want to make sure that you know that everybody knows they're on the court, when the Bucks want to be that team, they can be. Of course, you do expect the Bucks to get at least one game in the series at home. A sweep is very, very hard. It's unlikely, even though I still believe the Suns are the better team. Suns in four, guy, doesn't happen this series. But we still have the aspect of the Suns still have a chance to win this series unless you get the Giannis Antetokounmpo that we've gotten the past couple days. Past couple games, where he is just doing what he always does. Giannis doesn't have that many moves. I mean, I'm just going to be honest with you. Giannis does not have all the moves, and he doesn't have this bag that has endless moves in them where he comes down, he has a jump shot, he has the spin move, he has a mid-range game, he has a three-point game, he can hit his free throws, he can get to the basket and get and ones. I mean, Giannis is not that guy at all, never has been, never will be. Giannis has a little drive left, a little drive right, he has a little spin move, he has a little counter. Giannis's bag of moves, it's quite limited. But that bag being limited does not detour from him being one of the best basketball players in the association. I'm curious looking forward. I don't know what you're going to get from Jrue Holiday and Chris Middleton in game number four. I don't. Because I expect Monty Williams to make some tweaks, some proper tweaks going forward. And I do think you're going to get a better game from Chris Paul in game four than you will in game number, than you did in game number three. I think if the Suns win, I think that Chris Paul is going to play better, and ultimately he will be the Finals MVP. I know we've only played three games so far, but I'm just going to be honest with you. With all the talk and everybody wants to do things, oh, Chris Paul deserves it. He deserves it. Oh, it's a feel-good story. It's the way the NBA is, very, very emotional in the way that they give out awards. I do think this is Chris Paul's MVP because I do believe Chris Paul has to play better. The best Chris Paul we're going to see, I believe, in games four and five to hopefully close this thing out in Phoenix, going back to the 2-2-1-1-1 format, I believe, that the finals goes to now. So to the old 2-3-2, they started in the 80s when the Lakers and Celtics are going cross-country. And instead of going game four, let's say in L.A., game five in L.A., game six in Boston, and then game seven back in L.A., you do the 2-3-2 format. But they went away with that a few years ago and went back to the 2-2-1-1-1 to keep the uniformity of the NBA playoff format. I like Giannis. I like this Bucks team. I still don't think they're enough for what is needed. But if we do see Giannis play Giannis basketball, and if Giannis is more taking the David Ruffin approach, he's David Ruffin, and these are everybody else. If he wants to be that dominant guy, what happened to the Temptations ended up being a split up, and the group itself was not the same once David Ruffin really tried to be the focal point. Well, if Giannis tries to not play team basketball, we could see something very similar to where Giannis takes on the David Ruffin role. David Ruffin, look up the story. You'll see, you might be very intrigued by some things you read about David Ruffin, the individual, that are not about the music. Giannis, play Giannis basketball. Don't go the David Ruffin route or the I am the most important person here route. Because if you do, the Bucks might lose in five. If Giannis plays team basketball, this thing could go six, could go seven. And you know what? Oh, side note, this could bring drama to the ESPN. Because ESPN has some drama. If this series goes six, will Maria Taylor be there? I have seen reports that ESPN offered Maria Taylor, they offered the chance to triple her salary from around $1 million to around $3 million. She declined. From around $1 million to around $5 million, she declined. She is set on trying to get Stephen A. Smith money, and I don't believe she's that important to the ESPN as Stephen A. Smith or as a Mike Greenberg or a Scott Van Pelt. I mean, you just let Mike Golic, just let Trey Wingo and Kenny Mayne, all these guys that have been there for a long time, they're gone. Chris Berman, of course, you had diminished his role so much and you pushed him away. Maria Taylor, you're good. I don't know if you're worth that much money. Of course, you're always worth what somebody will pay you. But that market value for Maria Taylor, if she's not at ESPN, I don't think she'll get paid as much as she thinks she will. However, if this goes 6-7, people like myself and other people in the media will do a little more NBA Finals talk, dissecting and diving into the games, as well as adding in some Maria Taylor. Will we actually see Rachel Nichols on NBA Countdown? If Maria Taylor's contract is up and ends during the Finals, I'm not sure. But that's another storyline, little something else intriguing going on at the NBA Finals, as well as some things that are going on the court that's going to get heated up, ratcheted up, and man, the intensity on Wednesday night, woo-hoo-hoo, your boy is here for it. We mentioned it last week. It is still going into effect right now. The voting to find out who the best college football player since the year 2000 is. And let me just tell you, from those people that voted on Twitter, and if you're not on Twitter, if you're on Twitter and not following me, go ahead, head over there, follow me at jstevens07. You'll be able to vote on this like so many other people have, because this is fun. is July. I have another poll set up for the month of August, leading us up until the month or the start of the football season, the college football season. Can't let the cat out the bag just yet about what that poll is about, but trust me, some names only Hannah will give you, some names in this poll will be in that poll as well. The 32 participants that were a part of this poll go as follows. Now, these are in no order. These are randomly put together. And when I explain that, you'll see exactly why. Sean Taylor, Tim Tebow, Johnny Manziel, Ed Reed, Larry Johnson, the former running back at Penn State, Darren McFadden from Arkansas, Lamar Jackson, Ezekiel Elliott, Matt Leinart, Carson Palmer, Jason White, Vince Young, Eric Crouch, former Heisman Trophy winner from the University of Nebraska, the last time that football team had any deep, long run, a lot of success in the season, Adrian Peterson, Deshaun Watson, Brady Quinn, Adamakan Sue, Cam Newton, Braylon Edwards, Justin Fields, Mark Ingram, Baker Mayfield, Pat White, Saquon Barkley, Joe Burrow, Michael Vick, Reggie Bush, Robert Griffin III, Troy Smith, Derrick Henry, Larry Fitzgerald, and Devonta Smith. Now, I'm going to go back through this and let you know who won each matchup or who is moving on to the next round. Taylor versus Tebow. Sean Taylor won that matchup 53% to 48%. Manziel versus Ed Reed. Ed Reed won that one. Darren McFadden beat Larry Johnson. Lamar Jackson beat Ezekiel Elliott. Matt Leinart beat Carson Palmer. Vince Young beat Jason White. Adrian Peterson beat Eric Crouch. Oklahoma versus Nebraska, the old school rivalry that's getting renewed this year. Deshaun Watson beat Brady Quinn. Cam Newton beat Ndamukong Suh. And that one was a lot, not as close as I expected. That was 65% to 34%. Newton won that one. Justin Fields beat Braylon Edwards, a little Ohio State versus the team up north, little battle there. These were all randomly put together, so I was not the one that decided each matchup. This was all random, put it into a system, a little app on my phone, and it spit everything out. Mark Ingram versus Baker Mayfield. This one was a tie the first round, went into a second time of voting for 12 hours, not the original 24-hour setting, 67.4% to 32.6%. Baker Mayfield wins that one. Pat White beat Saquon Barkley. Joe Burrow beat Michael Vick. Y'all crazy. Gotta stop. I'm only laughing. This is comical. This is clearly, so clear that this is bias of young people. I don't care what you want to say about Joe Burrow's season. Ain't nobody in college football history ever said that Joe Burrow was a better quarterback than Michael Vick. Only thing you heard on the television was that Joe Burrow's season was the best season anybody had ever had in college football based on the way that offense was ran, how they played, and the talent that was around him. Go back and watch those Michael Vick got Virginia Tech to the national championship game. Michael Vick got Virginia Tech to the national championship game. When have you ever heard about the Hokies being good at football, that good at football? When have you ever heard about the Hokies ever having a good quarterback that can do something like that? When have you ever seen a player like Michael Vick? Think about this in the 90s. I was thinking about this very, very recently. You had Charlie Ward. You had Rashad Salaam from Colorado, who also won the Heisman Trophy. You had Tommy Frazier. Then you had Michael Vick. A string of four black quarterbacks that were elusive, that were crazy. Four guys that Rashad Salaam people don't really talk about, even though he won the Heisman. Charlie Ward gets talked about mainly because of the basketball that he played in the NBA, not because of his career at Florida State playing the college football, but to go from Charlie Ward to Rashad Salaam to Tommy Frazier to Mike Vick, and Mike Vick being the best out of all of them, he ain't won the Heisman. No, he didn't win the Heisman at all. And for Michael Vick to be the one that 20 years ago was changing the game, and people nowadays, you're comparing Lamar Jackson to a Michael Vick. You ain't comparing no Lamar Jackson to anybody else out there but to Michael Vick. And you know what? Michael Vick at the football, hey, as elusive as Lamar Jackson is, he ain't no Michael Vick. And Michael Vick's arm is actually better than Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson's arm is not that good. I mean, I'll be the first to tell you, his arm is not that good at all. It's decent. I mean, he could play NFL. If he did not have his legs, I would not have Lamar Jackson as my quarterback. Not at all. You say, Jay, he won the Heisman. He had all these receiving yards, passing yards in college. I don't care. I don't care at all. I don't care what you did in college. This is the NFL. This is the big dogs. This is the big league. And these youngsters that have Michael Vick losing to Joe Burrow in a randomly put together poll and randomly matched up together quarterbacks and athletes, this is crazy. It's a travesty. It's embarrassing. And I thoroughly encourage everybody, if you voted on this and you're saying that, oh, Joe Burrow over Michael Vick, I encourage you, go to the YouTube and tell me with what Michael Vick is doing on the YouTube is anything better than what Joe Burrow did on the field. Joe Burrow had all the, hey, missed me with the yards. Missed me with all the yards. Missed me with all that. Look at Michael Vick's talent, who was around him, and look at what Joe Burrow did as a player, and then come back and tell me. My DMs are open on Twitter. Tweet at me. It doesn't really matter. I'll reply. I might quote tweet that thing. I don't know. But help me figure this thing out. Where in the world, in anybody's mind, is it 51.4% Joe Burrow to 48.6% Michael Vick? Sean Taylor versus Ed Reed. That's a toss-up. That's hard. That's very... that's the second-round matchup. The first-round matchup was Sean Taylor versus Tim Tebow. And someone says, well, Tim Tebow was a two-time Heisman Trophy winner, won the Heisman and won national championships. Sean Taylor didn't do that. I still don't care. I still think that Sean Taylor, as a football player, is just as good as a football player as Tim Tebow was at the college level. If you have accolades, if you have to give me accolades to lift somebody up, okay, that's you. But if you take accolades away, the way that I vote, I am doing this. If you take accolades away, if you take everything away from what is right there in front of you, and if you say, okay, no accolades, just watch them play the football, that's how I have viewed this. That's how I think you should view and vote on these polls. But if you try to bring in, well, the accolades say, this is like the LeBron-Michael Jordan argument. I am a Michael Jordan guy, but I can tell you Michael Jordan's a better basketball player than LeBron James without looking at the accolades. I can. If you want to say that Kareem is better than LeBron or Kareem's better than Michael Jordan, you better tell me how he is without using the accolades. That's just how I look at things. I've always had a different twist, a different thought about trying to view how somebody is better than somebody else. If I go to a basketball game, if I go to a football game or a baseball game, I don't care about your accolades. I don't care about how many trophies are in your trophy case. I don't care how many rings are on your finger. All I care about is what is right in front of me when I'm watching you play the basketball and exactly trying to figure out what my eyeballs tell me as far as how good you are comparing you to things I have seen from other people on the field of play. So if you're going to be a person that says, oh, well, Tim Tebow's better for the accolades. Forget how he was on the field. The accolades. Miss me with that. Use your eyeballs. I know it's hard. I know we're in an era with analytics, and the analytics rule everything. Look that way. Use your eyeballs and look at the screen and tell me who you think is the better football player is. If you got a toss-up between Taylor and Tebow, great. Okay. If you got a toss-up between Manziel and Ed Reed, miss me with that too, because I still think Ed Reed's a better football player than Johnny Manziel. Always have, always will. Darren McFadden, second-round matchup. We're going to get to that very, very quickly. But that Michael Vick, Joe Burrow thing, that one still confuses me because a lot of these youngsters, man, revision, recency bias, I understand it, but y'all got to go back and watch Michael Vick because I still think Vick's a better football player in college than Joe Burrow, which is saying a lot because Joey B was good, boy. That boy was good. Now, the other matchup in the first round, other matchups, Reggie Bush beat Robert Griffin III, 86% to 14%. Troy Smith lost to Derrick Henry, 70.2% to 29.8%. I thought that would have been closer. I think it's also recency bias. Derrick Henry was phenomenal running back at Alabama. But Troy Smith was a dog in Columbus. And then also Larry Fitzgerald beat Devonta Smith, the reigning Heisman winner, 58.9% to 41.1%. The matchups for round number two, the round of 16, these first two matchups are going down today. Sean Taylor versus Ed Reed, Darren McFadden versus Lamar Jackson, Matt Leinart versus Vince Young, Adrian Peterson versus Deshaun Watson. Those can be voted on Tuesday. Wednesday's matchups are Cam Newton versus Justin Fields. I got Fields in that one. Baker Mayfield versus Pat White. I might go Pat White with that one. Once again, go back to the YouTube. You'll understand exactly why I say that. Joe Burrow versus Reggie Bush. That's Reggie Bush all day. Derrick Kinney versus Larry Fitzgerald. I'm going Larry Fitz with that one because what Larry Fitz did at Pitt, I mean, just be honest with you, it probably won't happen again. So the Newton, Fields, Mayfield, White, those two matchups will be on Wednesday. Then Burrow versus Bush, Henry versus Fitzgerald will be on Thursday. This is fun. We'll do more recaps next week. And I'm just going to sit here and tell you. So, if y'all pick Lamar Jackson over Darren McFadden, we're going to have a little discussion. If y'all pick Matt Leinart over Vince Young, we're going to have a little discussion. If you pick Cam Newton over Justin Fields, we're going to have a discussion as well. Joy B over Reggie Bush, that one will get me going because, once again, recency bias. If y'all pick Joy B over Bush, your boy might lose his mind right here on the podcast. Something that happened on the podcast last week that was a mistake by me and many other people in the media was focusing so much on the Rachel Nichols and Maria Taylor little dispute that was recorded illegally and then sent to Maria Taylor and other people at the ESPN, where the ESPN ended up suspending a producer for 2 weeks. And we're so used to the million. This guy gets 1 million here, 500,000 there. This young lady that got suspended was so low on the totem pole that her income is nowhere near the others. And losing pay does really affect her on a regular basis as far as paying bills and things like that. These are things that I have heard. I do not know dollar and cents what it is she makes on a regular basis from the worldwide leader. But I think we fell into a trap. It's very, very easy to go with the easy story. It's very, very easy to see something, read something, and say, "Ooh, I can talk about that for 30 minutes. And then do that very thing on your show. I did it here on the podcast. I even mentioned how I wasn't going to do any finals recap or finals breakdown here on the podcast when I should have done a little story or something here on the podcast in regards to the NBA finals. Didn't do that. I was listening to Straight Fire with Jason McIntyre. It was on the Dan Patrick feed. Happened to listen to a podcast or an episode there on his feed, and he had the Straight Fire, whatever the podcast is, Jason McIntyre does. And he even mentioned, we're going to talk about the Rachel Nichols and Maria Taylor thing. It even kind of pushed away the NBA Finals. And so many other people out there in the media went with the easy story. Instead of talking about something that happens once a year, the NBA Finals, the biggest games of the season in the NBA, and so many media people, media members, were so focused on this dispute that one, I think, was leaked on purpose. I'll say it again, was leaked right now on purpose for leverage while negotiating. But also number two, I think it was done in a way that makes Rachel Nichols look like a bad person. It was so easy for people to look at her and to rag on her and to talk about her, say, "You're racist, you're this, you're that," when people haven't talked to her. I went back and listened to an interview she did with Matt Barnes and Steven Jackson, All the Smoke. And the way she was in that interview, the things people are saying about her right now are not the way that I believe she's portrayed in NBA circles. It wasn't the way that Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes look at her, or Tracy McGrady or Vince Carter or so many other people. When something is contractually obligated, there's a written agreement between two parties for something to happen, and it sure seems like ESPN has not followed through with their end of the bargain, no matter what Maria Taylor has done in her career. We focus so much on that story that we didn't even praise. I didn't praise Chris Paul for what he did. I didn't spend enough time talking about Monty Williams and the coaching job he has done. I haven't talked enough about Cam Johnson and Jay Crowder and DeAndre Ayton, how he has really matured in his young career. There's a 3 to 5 year rule. Now, some people say that DeAndre Ayton was never going to be that guy. Look, I get 3 to 5 years to tell me what any player will be in the NBA. They can get better, but we can pretty much tell you what kind of player they will be in whatever sport. And DeAndre Ayton had not reached that threshold. It's just people are so quick nowadays, one of my pet peeves in sports, people are so quick nowadays to find a way to put down somebody. It's not just waiting to let the process roll out and continue to unveil and unroll itself to figure out what exactly is going to happen. I did spend enough time talking about Giannis and his injury and how he looked in game one, or Chris Middleton and how well he played in game number one, or Drew Holiday or Brook Lopez, now Robin, or so many other people. I focus so much on that story, way too much time on that story than I should have, that I forgot about and didn't focus on how good the basketball has been played by teams in the NBA Finals right now. It's a mistake. We're human. We all make mistakes. But one of the best things about us and being human, we can acknowledge the mistakes we make, and we can even get better and become better people, become better hosts, become better analysts by acknowledging our mistakes and making a mental effort to never do that thing again. Thank you guys so much for listening to another episode of the Jay Stevens Podcast. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at jstevens07. Send all of your emails to jstevenspod@gmail.com. If you enjoyed what you listened to today, I please encourage you, and I would love for you to, go to the Apple Podcast, leave a 5-star rating. 5 stars are the only things that are acceptable. 5-star rating and leave a comment as well. If you leave anything less than 5 stars, I'm going to assume it was a mistake, and let more people know about this podcast and how much you enjoyed it. This has been episode 211 of the Jay Stevens Podcast. I will see y'all next time.